Hello, I'm Brandon Perna, host of That's Good Sports, a 10-minute-ish daily NFL comedy podcast. Have you ever wished for a crappy version of The Daily Show, but only about the NFL? Then, first and foremost, I implore you to dream much bigger. Secondly, I would recommend subscribing to That's Good Sports. Every weekday, I will be giving you NFL news, telling questionable jokes, and swearing just enough so you won't ever be able to listen with your kids in the room or car. I don't ask for a lot, but if you don't subscribe on iTunes, my wife said she will leave me. Thanks, and I look forward to putting my voice in your earholes.
What it do, Hardwood Knox listeners? I am Dan Favalli coming at you to bring part two of our Pacific Division regular season preview. If you missed part one of this podcast, we talked about the Lakers, the Phoenix Suns, and the Sacramento Kings. I highly suggest you check it out. It was quite the banger, if I do say so myself. On part two, we'll be talking about the Golden State Warriors and the Los Angeles Clippers. Bleacher Report's Grant Hughes, both a co-worker and great friend of mine, is once again with us. Follow him on Twitter, at @GT_Hughes. Follow me on Twitter, at Dan Favalli, that's F-A-V-A-L-E. Follow Andy on Twitter, at Andrew D. Bailey. Follow the show on Twitter as well, at Hardwood Knox. And speaking again of Hardwood Knox, as I remind you every episode, please rate, review, and definitely subscribe to us on iTunes if you haven't done so already. We can be found wherever else you're getting your podcast, but iTunes is still the best way to let us know that you are out there, that you are listening. Throw us that 5-star rating, write a review. We've seen them rolling in. We really appreciate the comments. We're taking all the feedback into account. The kind words warm our hearts. The not-so-kind words are appreciated as well. Just keep the reviews, the ratings, and the subscriptions coming. If you've done all three of those things, refer us to a friend, frenemy, acquaintance, coworker, anyone who you think could use some enriching basketball analysis in their life. They won't regret it, we promise you. Finally, remember to follow Blue Wire on Twitter, at Blue Wire Pods. You'll be able to check out all the other great content that we're pumping out at Blue Wire, and you'll also be able to check out all the straight fire tweets that I have coming out on that account on a daily basis. With all that out of the way, though, let us get to part two of our Pacific Division preview with Bleacher Report's Grant Hughes. We get to move on to the Sacramento Kings, the plucky Sacramento Kings, 39-43 last year. What was their most underrated move of the offseason?
It might honestly just be that they didn't do anything ridiculous, right? Because, like, I mean, they did some stuff that was not smart that we'll get to, but I mean, you know, generally for Kings standards, they were okay. Like, I kind of like Corey Joseph. I like all the non-guarantees that they handed out. But, you know, I don't know. I guess maybe if it's underrated, I think maybe just the sort of shrewdness they showed in length of contracts given out, Harrison Barnes excluded, kind of counts for me as like a very non-Kings historically pretty sharp way to approach it.
That's totally fine though to go that way. And look, some of the numbers jump off the page of the contracts. Yeah. And I think it's easy to, we'll get to that in the next question, but it would be easy if we're talking about the movie like the least to say, oh, they really just signed Corey Joseph to 3 years, $37.2 million. Only 30 of that's guaranteed. And that's actually still a really high number. I know people around the league were flummoxed when that happened, but it's just the numbers don't look that they're actually not as large as they seem. And that's why my pick is just Dewayne Dedmon.
Yeah.
They can essentially look at this as a 2-year, $26.7 million deal, but it's a 3-year, $40 million deal with 26.7 guaranteed. The final year is actually, I think it's fully non-guaranteed, or it's close. It's only a million guaranteed. So I'll take that deal all the time, because if you're picking it up, he succeeded. He's someone who spaces the floor, can protect the rim. He is sneaky switchable on the defensive end, just where he can hang in space. You don't want him to be the Anthony Davis, but like he can handle some switches and being on those islands. That's if you're like the Kings and you have so many bigs and you view Marvin Bagley as a four, you need that type of center, because Bagley needs to get his touches in the post. He's just already so comfortable, you know, just turning around and firing on the block. And when you have Deadman as your five, now you have paths to five-way lineups without giving up size. Yeah. Deadman and Bagley, with the way that Bagley was shooting the ball at the end of last year, give you a five-out lineup, but, you know, assuming they don't put someone stupid in the other spot. So I really liked the addition of him, and I don't think it prohibits you too much from giving Bagley and Giles some reps at the five, too. You have to sort of commit to then playing Barnes and Ariza at the three a little bit more, maybe, or having Deadman on the bench and Bielisa not playing much so that you can get to lineups where Bagley or Giles is at the five and you play a small ball four. But there are permutations that will work. Minutes distributions that can work. And again, I'm just a big Dwayne Deadman fan. If anything, you know, they have Richaun Holmes on this roster too. So it does seem like there's overkill in the front court, but he's someone that fits whatever stylistic identity that they're aiming for.
Yeah. Deadman is that guy that, you know, every team that sort of needed a center that you didn't want to spend huge, like, you know, let's not think about targeting, say, Nikola Vucevic or whatever, you know, who could really be, you know, fit there is Deadman. And you could have said that about like 20 different teams. So for them to get him and, you know, do it basically on a two years of guaranteed money is great. I think if there's, yeah, that's clearly, if there's one guy, that's the signing that I think I like the best. The one to jump ahead that I just don't like is Harrison Barnes for 4 years. And is it 85? I think.
Yep.
And as you said,
fully guaranteed.
Wait, yeah.
Can we
no
pour
options
one out for Harrison Barnes being a wizard free agency.
This guy owns free agency. He's just like, he's going to be one of those guys when his career's over, you're like, Harrison Barnes made $600 million. You know, like something like that. Cause he's good. He always cleans up. So the problem is, and you hit on it, they view him as a small forward. And I don't know how many other teams in the league would agree with that. And I think the majority is right that he's a power forward, but you got to play Bagley. You got to get Giles's minutes up front. So he's just going to play the three. And he's going to be paid like a, you know, like a star to do it. And he's fine. He's a fine player, but he's like a mid-level exception or a little bit better than that player to me. But the Kings, I think, viewed themselves as kind of, you know, stuck because, you know, they traded for him, and to lose him so quickly would have been a bad look, and the optics still matter and blah, blah, blah. But I would have rather just gone into the season with, you know, if you want to play Ariza as a starter, fine. If you want to play Bogdanović and Hill together on the wings, I'm totally cool with that, even though you give up some defense there. But I didn't like the Barnes deal at all.
That was my pick too. And if we shifted a little bit, did they have to sign Barnes and Ariza? Like, couldn't they at least get somewhat of a true three? I know Ariza, I'm okay with him playing a three, but as he gets older, you would think that it makes more sense to play the four. And I know his contract is mitigated by the fact that I think he only has $1.8 million guaranteed in his second year or something like that. Yeah, 1.8. So you can look at it as a short-term investment. At the same time, that's money when you just look at it in conjunction with Barnes. Next season alone, they're all of a sudden paying both of those guys $36.4 million about. Why couldn't we have gone after a Marcus Morris for this roster? Or someone like that. It would seem like if you were going the dual big route, like you clearly did, why couldn't there have been more of an effort to sign a true wing? And, you know, the point about Marcus Morris, he hung around free agency for a while. And even when he actually agreed to a contract, he was still available, apparently. So
maybe he's the master of free agency. I think just to put a bow on it. The other thing, too, is if you're going to commit that money to Barnes, you've got Fox, you've got Hield, you've got Bagley, and you've got Bogdanović, who are going to be due up for contracts in the next, you know, 1 and 2 years, basically. They can extend Hield now, Bogdanović too, but his contract is structured in such a way that he'd be insane to take an extension now rather than hit free agency. But like, those guys are all much more important than Barnes. And I think you're tying up money in the wrong guy when you're really going to have to spend a lot of it to keep these guys that matter a lot more.
And ironically, I'd have zero problem with this contract just about if they were planning on playing him as a full-time power forward.
Yeah, I agree. That would change it completely to me. But that's just not an option, because I think Bagley, honestly, is playing down a position as it is. Like, I'd almost rather just see them say, screw it, he's going to play the five and we're going to just outrun everybody. But yeah, the positional stuff is kind of messy there.
What's your biggest question for this team leading into next year?
I mean, it's sort of similar to is the vintage LeBron enough to make them a contender? I do foresee, I'll give away a lot of what I think about this team, but I think Fox is going to take a massive leap. And I think Bagley showed enough last year for me to sort of get past all the questions I had about him pre-draft and stuff. I think Bagley's going to be a good, possibly limited, one-dimensional, you know, one-sided NBA player with potential to be a good defender. I think those guys are going to be way better. And I wonder if that's enough to get them to the playoffs. And I kind of lean towards no, and that's a bummer. And that's going to trigger a lot of impatience. And I wonder how the franchise is going to handle that.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And it's, did they, again, they didn't necessarily tether themselves long-term to this payroll, but you did give out the fully guaranteed Harrison Barnes contract, 4 years, $85 million. Buddy Hield is extension eligible, and he's going to sign a contract next summer. De'Aaron Fox then will be extension eligible right behind him. You're getting to the point where you started investing in outside pieces, even if you want to include the Dedmon contract, if you think he's going to be there for the full 3 years, and now you're getting to a point where you have to reinvest in your core, and where do they stack up in the West? That's a question that's sort of later, but are they good enough to say that this is the core that we can move forward with? And it's not about Fox. He is a viable number one, and he, spoiler, will be part of my bold prediction, but it's the rest of the roster. And I actually think that Bagley was a little, I don't even know if he was underrated. People didn't talk about it. I was just really impressed with his defensive effort last year. And so maybe him and Fox are that viable 1-2. The rest of the roster, though, is just, it's not just peppered with it. It's inundated with what ifs and yeah, if this, then that, and question marks of that ilk.
I got another bonus question. I know we don't want to drag this too long, but are we sure Luke Walton is an upgrade over Dave Yeager? And I ask that because, you know, Yeager, I think, is a bristly personality. Just being around the team a little bit last year, it was very obvious that he and the way that he's left other stops in his career, he's just kind of hard to get along with. But he is responsible, I think, for this team establishing an identity last year of just, we're going to run because we have De'Aaron Fox and no one is as fast as De'Aaron Fox. And it really worked for them. And I think you can attribute that to Yeager. For all his interpersonal issues, I think he kind of had this team playing the way that it needed to. And I don't know if we have the information to confirm or deny that Luke Walton is a good NBA coach. So I think Yeager did have to go, but I really don't know. I have a major, significant amount of uncertainty about whether Luke Walton is going to be a reason that they win more than 39 games or fewer.
And I think the biggest way to tell, this is just from an outsider, because I think people are too critical of head coaches in the sense that,
sure, yeah,
like, you know, you and I don't really understand the game. Like, it's no, just, you know, there are these far out perspectives. That's probably a terrible thing to say on a basketball podcast, but whatever. It's, and so is there going to be a defensive improvement with this team? And that's what I think you look towards. And I don't think there's a guarantee that Luke Walton is that type of coach. I don't know how you could have drawn that conclusion from his time with the Warriors. I know he stepped in for Steve Kerr, but he had the best roster in the history of basketball at his
disposal. Yeah. That was a substitute teacher stepping in for like the AP whatever class that just ran itself. Like it was
in mid June when the AP exactly class was already taken. They weren't even learning anything.
Yeah, that, and you can't learn anything about a guy that coaches a LeBron James team, really. So you got maybe, what do we have, a year of non LeBron? I think it's just one, maybe two, of Luke Walton as a head coach that, you know, with a young roster. It's really hard to know. So I think that's something to kind of monitor as the year goes on, because look, the Kings move on from coaches like no other, or they have, you know, over the last decade or so. So it would be a rough look for them to find out that Walton was not, you know, a significant improvement, which he would need to be, because Yeager won them 39 games a year ago, which is a huge deal for a Kings team that hasn't made the playoffs since like 06, I think.
And that win total could very easily go sideways in the wrong direction this year.
Yeah, it could. And this is like the Rubio thing where he's an upgrade, but I hate it. The Kings could be a lot better and win fewer games. That's just how it is. I mean, the West is ridiculous.
The West is the West.
Exactly. It never changes. And, you know, their differential suggests they really did deserve to win those 39 games. But, you know, for every leap that De'Aaron Fox takes, there's the possibility that, you know, maybe Bogdanovich, who I love, is worn down from FIBA, from dominating FIBA, by the way. And maybe Barnes just, you know, continues to not fit. I just, you know, they could be better and win 38 games and finish, you know, 8 games back of the 8th spot. It's just, it's tough. It's going to be really tough to gauge success for this team, which I feel like we're saying a lot, but that's just how I feel with them.
Yeah, negative point differential last year, net rating of a negative 0.8. That's really outside of crunch time. That's tough stuff.
Yeah.
This is a softball. Are they going to be grayed out better on the offensive end or the defensive end?
Well, you know, you say that. And they were kind of mid pack for both last year. I think by NBA.com they were like 17th and 18th or something
same,
like that.
Same with cleaning the glass as well, 17th.
And yeah, 18th. Maybe it was cleaning the glass. I think it's offense, just because Bagley's going to play more, and as you say, he's got potential there. But I don't believe that a second year big guy is suddenly going to be a league average defender. Hield's going to play a lot. He's suspect. Fox has a ton of defensive ability, and he's, you know, his flashes are as bright as they get, but the load he's going to have to carry is so big that I think, again, like last year, we'll see him pick his spots. So probably offense, especially if they run like they did last year, then I think they're really going to run, they're going to pile up transition points.
I agree with you. It would be offense. They were, maybe, I just don't, their wing defense is just going to be suspect in general when you have Barnes and Ariza both spending a bulk of their time at the three. And that would be a main reason for me why I wouldn't pick defense here. Breakout candidate for them, or the player most likely to take a leap.
Yeah, it's Fox. I mean, again, it felt double. Yeah, up. Right. Last year was a leap, I guess. 17-7 basically. I kept going back to a stat whenever I'd write about him last year. I think he was one of a really small number of guys to go 17-7 while shooting 37% from three or something. And he was like really rare to have done that at his age. But like we see this, right? It happens all the time. It's like when we thought Giannis had made the leap, and then he made the leap, capital L leap after that. Not saying Fox is on that level, but I just think he has absolutely everything you want in a point guard. He's super competitive. I think he works really hard. He's insanely talented. And I think he's just going to be a guy that if he averaged 25 a game next year and 8 assists and shot close to 40% from three, it wouldn't surprise me. So he's my pick. And I don't know. I don't know if you could come up with a stat line that I'd, say was too outlandish for next year for him.
I think I agree. I kind of toyed with the idea of Giles or Bagley. I think that's getting too cute, though. De'Aaron Fox is the one person that we can guarantee is not going to have his role impacted by all the things that happened over the offseason. And you could probably say the same thing about Buddy Hield, but he sort of seems like he's at two or close with his ceiling. And with the roster, the way it's built now, he's not going to get more ball handling responsibility.
No.
And unless he just shoots up the defensive ladder, I don't know how you make the argument for him. And Fox is just going, he was the engine last year, and he's going to be the engine again. He doesn't, I compared this when I was writing about him at the end of the season to where Jason Tatum still kind of has to worry about pecking order politics. Those don't exist in Sacramento. De'Aaron Fox is the guy. And so they're end all be all essentially. And I'm not going to say what I'm going to say, cause I want to save it for my bold prediction, but he just seems like he's going to make that next leap, which is even more difficult to make, by the way, because his last year's improvement, that was the honeymoon leap. Now it's, can you take that next level to actual superstar, all NBA level, make an all-star team in the Western Conference? That's a hard jump to make, but watching him last year, it seems like he's fully capable.
Yep, I agree. And also, you're forgetting Buddy Hield is on the downside of the aging curve now.
Yeah, so he's 34,
predicting,
I forgot.
Predicting breakouts for him is, that could be your bold prediction, is that Buddy Hield improves in his age 37 season.
Look, it's your time to shine. Player most likely to be traded on the Kings.
Trevor, I don't know his middle name, Ariza. Yeah, just because he has to be. Joking aside, like, look, I think we haven't even mentioned Nemanja Bjelica yet. And he's someone
my pick, by the way. So have at it.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Good. Okay, you can mention him. But so what I was going to say is, like, I kind of want to find minutes for him. And I don't know how you do that, but removing Trevor Ariza from the equation might make it easier. The other thing is, I think Bogdanović is just going to deserve to play a lot. So that's another guy who's going to chip into those wing minutes. And again, everybody always wants to trade for Trevor Ariza, so he is my pick. Explain Bjelica to me. I'm interested in that.
The best way to get Bjelica more minutes is to trade Bjelica. Okay. I don't want to see – look, trading – if you trade – Trevor Ariza, you trade Harrison Barnes, you trade Bogdanović, Bjelica should not be on the wing. I'm done with the Kings aren't so guilty of this, but when he was in Minnesota, there's just those weird times where he's playing the three. No, he's a four or five. And so you have Giles, Rashawn Holmes, Dwayne Dedman, and Marvin Bagley, where are those minutes coming from for him? I mean, right now, I guess you could say he's the backup four, but I'm also assuming that they're going to want, you know, I would say Ariza is a trade candidate because he's Trevor Ariza, the walking trade candidate, the annual right. trade candidate. But I'm assuming they want Barnes to play some four. And so that's just going to cannibalize even more of those front court minutes. And I just don't see a long-term spot for him. I guess if you trade Trevor Ariza, it makes it easier, but it doesn't really solve the, yeah, you already have, let's say, two guys who are going to play the four already in Giles, even though they might consider Masetta and Bagley. And I'm assuming they want some small ball 4 minutes. It's just so crowded. I think it's going to be him that'd be the player most likely to get traded.
Yeah, I think that's totally reasonable.
Strongest year-end award candidate, excuse me. I'm saying war for no reason in particular.
Oh, this is a tough one. I mean, I feel like I can rule out coach of the year and defensive player of the year. You could make the case. I hope I'm not going to step on you here. You could make the case that Bogdanović could be a sixth man candidate, but I have bigger things in mind for him for my bold prediction. So
MVP, wow.
I get, yeah. Well, you know, way to spoil it. Am I going to do this? I think it's De'Aaron Fox for MVP. I think I could see him finishing. He's not going to win it. But if he's in the top like eight, I could see it. I could see that happening, and I just don't see another obvious one on this roster.
Now, my pick is De'Aaron Fox, but it's for MIP, not MVP, because it's an award he could have won last year. I think people are reticent to give it to sophomores, which is, to me, is actually perfectly fair. I didn't vote for him either. And so you get those, they wouldn't be called sympathetic votes, but just sort of like, it's almost like his candidacy would be evaluated over the past two seasons, not just from year two to year three. At the same time, it wouldn't be completely ridiculous to me if he is the most improved player in the NBA from last season to this coming season. His stat line was, it was great last year, but is it really outside the realm of possibility for him to blow, you know, 17-8 out of the water this year? I don't think so.
I fully expect it. That's why I went. I mean, I kind of crossed over our categories and just went really bold with my prediction. But yeah, I like that a lot. I think. I mean, I don't know. Could he be the front runner for MIP right now? Like, I just if you had to guess. I mean, in the whole league, I don't know who I would pick ahead of him. Because we've both gone back and forth. Like, he's just going to have a monster year. I think it's like a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, there's. I don't think there are any other obvious candidates. I'm looking right now and I just don't, nothing really just jumps out to me. Maybe I'm forgetting someone obvious. I don't think that I am.
Yeah. I mean, you get into the Tatum, like maybe he has a huge leap. Maybe like, I don't know, maybe Donovan Mitchell becomes like a full on superstar
maybe
and that
Lonzo
would get
Ball
it.
Stays healthy.
Maybe Lonzo Ball, maybe Trevor Ariza and a push to get traded just has a bunch of 40 point games and he gets it. I like that a lot. Do you have a bold prediction? Are we there yet?
Yes, we're at the boldest. Lineup you're dying to see from this team.
Oh, see,
why do you hate this category? You keep skipping.
I don't know
over it.
because I always just pick like, well, this would be a good one. So it's not interesting. I mean, I like Fox. I don't care how you split it up, but I want Bogdanović and Hield on the wings. I'm going to just go small because I want Barnes to play the four because he is a four. And then I'll play Bagley at the five. And I think if you're trying to spread the floor and run, which is all this team should do, I think that's, I don't know how you top. And, you know, you could get Giles out there somehow because he's such a good passer. But I'm not going to play him over Bagley or Barnes up front. So I think that's how I do it.
I really want to see what probably should be there. It's not going to be their starting lineup, but Fox, Hield, Bogdanović, Bagley, and Dedmon. But the lineup that you mentioned, put Bagley at the five. That's the lineup that I want to see. Fox, Hield, Bogdanović, Barnes, and Bagley. That's another lineup I want to see. So those two lineups are super exciting to me. I'm not high on what I think their starting lineup is going to be, where you have Harrison Barnes probably at the three, I'm assuming. Unless you're bringing him off the bench and starting Ariza, that's not something I'm high on. So I want to see a ton of those two lineups. I also wouldn't mind if you can get to it. Let's say you pull Barnes and then throw in Giles. And so I want to see more of the Bagley-Giles front court together.
Yeah, I think too, if you can do that and play a couple of, you know, not, you know, conventional-ish bigs, if you play Bogdanović as a second side playmaker instead of Barnes, because Bogdanović really has a ton of point guard skills. And if you're going to play two bigger guys up front, I think you can really get a lot of mileage out of having that guy who's going to make a play, you know, on the other side when it gets swung from Fox over there. So I like that a lot too.
Where are they finishing in the West?
I mean, I don't think they're a playoff team. Again, and they could improve and that could still be the case. I'll just slot them at ninth because I really believe they're going to be better, but not quite enough.
I think I'm going with ninth too. And that's, if you can stay, forget about the record. If you can have a slightly better or close to the same point differential and finish ninth in next year's Western Conference, there's something to the idea that that would be a win for them.
I agree. Especially, I mean, the thing is, I don't think that this franchise would view it that way. I think they're really, even as last year, they really wanted to make the playoffs. And clearly with a roster that like just wasn't ready for that. But I agree. I think they're ninth, and I think that's going to be viewed as a disappointment. And I think that's the wrong way to look at it.
Boldish prediction for them.
I think Bogdanovich is going to significantly outperform Buddy Hield. And that'll feel like a recency thing just because he was so good over the summer. But I just think that, you know, Hield is obviously one of the best shooters in the league, but he is fairly limited. And I think that for the Kings to really get to the next level, and hopefully they're smart enough to realize this, Bogdanovich as another playmaker out there just really matters. Especially, you know, if you're trying to get Bagley a bunch of easy looks, though he can generate plenty himself. I think he adds a dimension that Hield does not, and you don't really lose that much in the shooting department because Bogdanovich can hit threes. I think he's potentially going to be quite a bit more valuable to them than Hield will. And Hield is clearly the bigger name and you know, the draft pedigree and all that stuff. But I just like Bogdanovich a ton.
Mine is De'Aaron Fox is a consensus top 17 player by the end of next season. And I'm picking such an odd number because I want to make it clear that I don't think he's going to be in the necessarily the all NBA discussion, but I think he's going to be better than top 20.
Would you rather have him or Devin Booker?
De'Aaron Fox.
I agree. Even if they were both maxed out right now, I'd still say Fox.
I wrote about the best players age 23 and under. And the only, if we're taking them for their careers, not just for next season, the only players that I would want in front of him right now are Doncic and Zion Williamson. And at least one of those is in a surefire guarantee. You're rolling the dice in a big way on Zion.
I love that you're as high on Fox as I am. It really reinforces that I'm not an insane person, or maybe we both are. So I don't know if that's good or not.
But we're equally insane then.
Equally, that's right.
A few of us on this show use Harry's Razors. If you visit their website, you can check out all different shave sets and face care products. Join the 10 million who have tried Harry's. Claim your special offer by going to harrys.com/bluewire. Why try Harry's? Well, Harry's founders were two regular guys tired of getting ripped off and paying for overpriced razors. Harry's makes quality, durable blades at a fair price, just $2 per blade. If you don't love your shave, let them know and they'll give you a full refund. This summer, refresh your wallet and your face with a Harry's trial set. It comes with weighted ergonomic handle for an easy grip, 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade for a close shave, rich lathering shave gel that will leave you smelling great, and a travel blade cover to keep you razor dry and easy on the go. Listeners of this show can redeem their trial set at harrys.com/bluewire. Make sure you go to harrys.com/bluewire to redeem your offer and let them know I sent you to help support the show.
The Los Angeles Clippers, they did some stuff this offseason. I don't know if anyone heard. They were 48-34 last year. We know about them getting Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. Was there an underrated move that you liked by them, Grant?
Oh, gosh. Holding on to Landry Shamet, does that count?
Why not?
I'm trying to, you know, be offbeat with these. Just because, obviously, they were willing to give up everything to get the top end guys that they wanted. And I mean, I don't know who wouldn't have. I'm sure the Thunder asked, but I thought that just keeping him around as a guy who might play some point guard, who is going to shoot, who's an underrated defender, who's one of the few like young guy. I mean, Zubac definitely counts, but a guy with some youth and some upside on a pretty veteran established team. I think there's value there too. So holding on to him through this makeover, I think is going to go down as something they're going to be very happy that they did.
I want to pick them getting Mo Harkless and a first round pick, which they then were able to flip in the Paul George trade. But I don't think that's underrated because of the attention it's already received.
Yeah, yeah.
Jamichael Green, keeping him after picking mm-hmm. That trade. Oh my, Garrett Temple and Jamichael Green for Avery Bradley. Boy, oh boy, did the Clippers win that trade.
Yeah, Green is going to, I'm sure we're going to talk about Green several times here, but that it's funny that, retentions are their underrated moves when all the acquisitions were so high profile.
Yeah, it's Jamichael Green. I mean, he gave the Warriors some fits in the playoffs as the small ball five.
He was the only center that, I mean, Harrell obviously did what he does, but I agree. I think Green, I mean, you could talk me into him being their best guy to close at the five. Given the matchups, but
Montrezl Harrell's really good. He's not the best defender, and no. Green is clearly a better defender than him. So I could see him being in a lot of closing lineups over Trez. Maybe you play them together. I don't know how much that really helps you unless you see kind of a weak link that you can stash Trez on in the front court at the four or the five.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't know what the next thing is, what we wish they would have done or just biggest loss
like something.
Or,
yeah.
Or, I mean, like, I don't know what to say. I mean, could you have given up slightly fewer picks for Paul George? I don't know. Like, I guess maybe, but I mean, everyone agrees, they just turned this team into a full on, title favorite by a lot of accounts. I don't know what to complain about. I mean, maybe you didn't need to commit to Zubac.
That's what I was going to say. You want to see someone complain? Here it comes.
Let's hear it. I teed it up.
Who else was paying Zubac? Who's paying him? Why did you need to give him 4 years and $28.5 million?
It's a good question, but I mean, do you really want to butt heads with Jerry West and tell him he's wrong?
No, I would never say that to his face, but... And I get that the fourth year is a club option, so you want to look at his 3 years and $21 million. Who is paying Zubac more than the taxpayers mid-level? I just want to know. Tell me the team. Someone come forward. If there's a team executive listening, I apologize, one, that you're listening to this podcast. But two, just say that your team was going to pay him more than $5 million a year. And I'm not saying that'd be a gross overpay. I'm just, why? Why?
Right. I mean, like, so yeah, we've gone over this with most centers, I think, over the last couple of years, as the market has sort of dictated that, like, unless you're a superstar Gobert type defender or offensive fulcrum on Jokic's level or something like that, like, you just can't spend on centers. I mean, even Dedmon, really, we agree that was a good signing for the Kings, but like, that's a little pricey for a five, but he does space the floor and all that stuff. It's almost like they looked at this roster and, I mean, if there is a weakness, I guess there's not a ton of size up front because you're looking at Green and Harrell as your best options at the five, really. So maybe they just decided, like, we're going to need some bulk. This guy's young. He showed flashes. Let's just commit. I mean, that's totally the devil's advocate case, but I think that has to have been the thinking, because otherwise I agree. It's like, what?
I would just like to note that he averaged under 10 minutes a game in the playoffs.
So right. I mean,
the Zubac averaged under 10. I'm just throwing that out there.
he's going to come back and average like 17 and 8 and start to hit threes or something just to prove me wrong. But yeah, no, that's totally fair. But again, I think we can agree that, like, there were just a lot of home runs hit for the Clippers in this offseason. That's not a hot take.
Do you have a question mark for them? Did you just touch upon it? Been talking about their size.
I mean, that's one. I think the biggest one for me is, like, I think we're all just sort of in the bag is like, okay, you got Kawhi, you got Paul George, you got, a rotation that's like 11 deep. They're in the finals, right? But I think my question is, are we underrating the health component? And there is a ton of depth here, and that insulates them to some extent. But Paul George's shoulders are a major issue. We don't know when he's going to be back. We don't know if he's going to shoot it like he did the second half of the year when he just, totally fell out of the MVP discussion. I would suspect that Leonard will not play significantly more games than he did last year. Maybe this condition that, some people have said is like a deteriorating thing with the quad muscle deteriorates. So, I mean, it's really like, it's nitpicking. It's kind of scrambling for a downside. But my big question is just like, are we sure that these two top end guys are healthy enough to make this team what everyone thinks it's going to be?
What would be the over-under on the number of games that Kawhi Leonard and Paul George play in together during the regular season?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, without like scouring the schedule and really thinking about how long George will be out, like, I don't think it's unrealistic to say like they might play 41 together, you know, 50 would be great, I think.
I think the over-under should be like 47 or 48. And I might take the under. It depends on a big component is, will George be ready to start the season?
I for everything I've seen, and maybe there's new stuff out there, it seems highly unlikely. And if you're the Clippers and you've got like, you know, pretty grand aims for this year, and by the way, like, they got a 2-year window before both of those guys.
Yeah.
Like, you kind of got to, it's got to be this year. So maybe you hold them out till December or something just to be sure. Cause, you know, you get really two cracks at this and you don't want to, you know, rush them back. So yeah, that could be the question, is just how many games they play together. And it may not be as many as a lot of people think.
That would be one of my questions. The one I'm going to go with, cause I actually figured you were going to pick that one, is there going to be an issue when it comes to primary playmaking here? Because Paul George and Kawhi Leonard are kind of like the second guys. And if you have two secondary playmakers, that can maybe be equated to one. But we just talked about, we don't know how many games they're going to play together. Patrick Beverley's not that guy. Lou Williams has the pick and roll chemistry with Trez. He's not this natural point guard. Is that at all an issue for them? And, you know, are they willing to try Landry Shamet out at point guard? Because one, he would have nice size for a point guard, but two, he receives a lot of due for his credit and his shooting, and he deserves it. He can move, he can just hit off the catch, but he has some stuff that he can do off the dribble. He ran some pick and rolls in both, not so much in Philly, but he ran a few more, it seemed like, with the Clippers after he was traded there. Just seems like someone who could be a competent ball handler. And then if you can get those minutes out of him, it's a non-issue. But I do think that's something we kind of have glossed over in the aftermath of the all the pomp and promise of the Clippers' offseason.
I think sort of implicit in what you're talking about is like, this team does not have a lot of good passers and at any position. I mean, like, you know, Leonard, I think if you were poking holes in his incredible playoff run, it was that like, he's not really an intuitive, like, play ahead of the play passer guy. He's like, I've got three guys hanging on my shoulders and I need to get rid of the ball. And so I can see an open teammate and I will throw it to him. You know, Beverly's not a conventional point guard. Lou Williams sees the floor fine, but he's a bucket getter who his passing is kind of pick and roll passing. I think the playmaking, just setting aside like who's got the ball when it matters type of stuff, is this could be a team that, you know, might be susceptible to just, you know, decent defensive pressure where you're doubling and you're making them scramble and they just don't, you know, move the ball that effectively. I hadn't really thought of that till you mentioned that, but I think that's something to kind of keep an eye on.
Well, this might actually be a tough question. Will they be better on the defensive end or the offensive end?
Yeah, so having said all that, I think they'll be better on offense, which sounds ridiculous when you have George and Leonard. But again, I don't think they're going to play that much. And I think the main reason I think offense is like, so you've got two superstars that'll be there with your first unit, and then you still get to send Lou and Trez to just smoke backups. So... And I think you give back a lot defensively with those two out there. So I think the offense is going to stay kind of humming along, you know, first quarter, second quarter into those, you know, those weird nether parts of the game, first half of the fourth quarter where you've got a weird lineups out there where the defense may drop off a little. But I don't know how you're going to stop this team, regardless of which of their 11 good NBA players are on the floor.
I'm with you. I'm tempted to go defense just because the Beverly George Leonard thing is absolutely absurd.
Oh, yeah.
But we don't know how many games all three of those guys are going to play together. The other thing for me is you have to get Lou Williams plenty of reps, and he's just an offensive firecracker. And then the other thing for me, which might be the bigger thing for me, how much time is George or Leonard going to spend at the four? Because if you're viewing them as just the two and the three, the wing guys, that's perfectly fine. You don't really have that great of a defensive front court then. You know, Zubac, Trez up front at the five, Jermichael Green, I don't really like him as a defensive four. I'd rather see him at the five there. Harkless is fine. Is Patterson healthy? Maybe he helps them. I'm just not crazy about their options outside of Leonard and George as a four. And maybe you can bump them up. You know, you play Shamet with Beverly, and then you have George and Leonard, and they're interchangeable with the three and the four. But do either one of them, you know, players are weird about which positions they want to play. Do either one of them want to shoulder a ton of a huge defensive workload at the four? And then what does that even look like? Do we know that either of them would be super effective as a defensive four, depending on who they're going up against? So there's a chance the defense is better, but I think the offense is the safer, more comfortable pick.
Yeah, I agree.
Who's your breakout candidate for this roster?
We're kind of short on him. It's another veteran team. I think it has to be Shamet. Just because of where he is in his career, but also because, like you said, you read these things about how, you know, he's been spending the summer working on, you know, point guard stuff. He was a point guard in college, so it's not a huge stretch. I just think there are going to be so many instances where he'll be set up to succeed, whether that's playing the two with all of the defensive attention on, you know, superstars, and he's going to get a ton of open looks, or playing the one and, again, just sort of being an afterthought for the defense. And he's good enough with or without the ball, I think, to just be really efficient. And, you know, maybe Beverly, he's not the youngest guy in the world, takes a step back. Maybe Lou Williams, who's, you know, certainly has his warts and, you know, is also not that young, you know, takes a step back, and suddenly it's Shamet that's like, yeah, he's our lead guard. That's it. I think that's definitely realistic. So the skill and the potential opportunity, I think, really line up pretty well for him.
The dare to be great pick would be Rodney Magruder. Just throwing it out there. They don't have a ton of backup wings. Landry Shamet, I guess you could consider a wing, but defensively, I think that those backup slots fall to Magruder and Harkless or better fits for them than a Shamet would be. You probably want to see him switching on to point guards before you want to see him switching on to true threes. But I don't know how many minutes Magruder is going to get. I think it's definitely Shamet, especially if they give him some spot time at point guard. That might give him an extra opportunity to flourish.
Yeah, I agree.
Player most likely to be traded from the Clippers this season.
This is a tough one. I mean, I think I'm going to lean toward Harkless, only because I actually like Magruder a little better than him. And as you said, there's going to be such a minutes crunch. I guess I could see another team thinking like Harkless is, well, we want Portland Harkless or whatever, 3 years ago or something. He's going to play the four. Maybe he'll remember how to shoot. He's going to defend. I think he would have value for another team. Whereas like a guy that's a suspect shooter whose utility is really as like a hustle rebounder, multi-position defender, like we don't need you because we have Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. So I guess just because he's not going to be maximized and he has some value, I'm going to go with him.
Yeah, and I think since he's on an expiring contract, maybe there's a team where their season kind of goes off the rails and they're looking to cut salary and you're giving up a player that has 2 years left on his deal for one. One team that springs to mind, although I think they're a playoff team in the East, is, you know, maybe Detroit wants to get rid of Tony Snell at some point because they don't view themselves as a playoff team with this core all of a sudden. And that's something to look at. Tough question on that team for sure. This question's a little bit more fun, but in a tough way. Strongest year-end award candidate on the Clippers roster. I'll get that question right at some point.
Well, you have one more chance after this one. I think it's Doc Rivers for Coach of the Year, because I think he, you know, it's sort of like the Oscars or like the Emmys, where there's like a sort of a lifetime achievement sense to, like, if there's a director or an actor that's been nominated a bunch and they didn't win, but then they do a really, you know, a decent job, you know, 3 years after that ends up winning it for them. I think the Clippers are going to win a ton of games. I think Doc did a phenomenal job last year with, you know, a roster that everyone I think would agree overachieved. I think he could just be it could be as simple as he's going to coach the team that wins 60 games and is first in the West and end of story. But there's also the element of, like, I think he's just got so much respect around the league and stuff like that it could be his to lose.
I'm going to go with Lou Williams, Sixth Man of the Year, because Leonard and Paul George, I think, are going to miss a good amount of time combined, that Lou Williams is going to be no less essential offensively than he was last year. And if he's going to be coming off the bench again, which I think we can reasonably assume that he will, there'll be an opportunity for him to be that guy once again. And Sixth Man of the Year is one of the awards where there doesn't seem to be voter fatigue. People don't mind voting for fucking Jamal Crawford every year. And just like the same thing with Lou Williams. And I think people might wonder why we're not picking MVP or Defensive Player of the Year for Leonard or George I just don't think either of them are going to have the sample size. I know Leonard said he's planning on playing the entire regular season. I don't think he is, one. And two, it would be irresponsible of the Clippers to try to force to get him through that. Yeah. They saw how well it worked with Toronto, the load management, and they're dealing with a two-year window, which is it's about as fragile as what the Raptors were dealing with. It's a year more, but it's only a year. So you have to be careful there.
Well, and you got the vote splitting thing too. It's always so much easier for a guy to win it if it's, you know, if he's clearly the driver of success. And I, you know, barring something hard to imagine, I think it'll be, you know, I think probably everyone agrees Leonard is better, but I mean, Paul George is pretty much a consensus top 10 guy. So it's going to be tough for one or the other to emerge to the extent you would need to be like, oh, that's clearly the MVP. So that you got to think about that too.
Their most efficient path would be if one of them misses time, like let's say George misses a huge chunk of the beginning of the season and Leonard ends up not being really load managed. That's how you build your case, is that you carry the team without the star and then you have the sample size to boot.
Yeah, I agree.
The lineup you're dying to see from the Clippers.
Okay, this is going to be weird and I don't even think it would necessarily work. But I would have Shamit, George, and Leonard are my 2, 3, 4, and you can swap George and Leonard however you want. But then I also want Lou and Montrezl Harrell at the 1 and the 5.
Ooh, that's fun.
So this way, and this is why it would never happen. Your offense is based around the Williams Harrell pick and roll, except the guys spacing the floor and attacking late closeouts and stuff are Shamit, George, and Leonard. And there's no defense for that. But the Clippers, I just don't think would ever do it. I just can't imagine how fun it would be to have like Paul George attacking a scrambling defense after everyone collapses on Harrell. And it would just be chaos. So I'd love to see that.
My lineup is Beverly, Shamit, Leonard, Paul George, and Michael Green. That's probably the lineup I think they should close with a lot of the time. Yeah. Just because I wonder how much of Harrell's value is mitigated when Lou Williams isn't on the floor. So do you really want him closing games at the five? I'm with yours though. Yours is super fun. If they wanted to get mega weird, just pull the center, pull Jermichael Green, and throw Harkless in there, and let's see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, there are going to be a lot of teams that's like, even teams that have conventional centers, like say just we'll take the Warriors because we're going to talk about them next. Like, are you really that concerned that either Green or like even Leonard is guarding Willie Cauley-Stein? Like, is that an exploitable matchup for the Warriors? Like, I think you could really get away with a lot because you're not really sacrificing that much length and size if George and Leonard are out there together.
Where will the Clippers finish in the West?
We just talked up how, you know, we don't know how many games they're going to play, all this stuff. I just think they're so deep, and I think they're going to finish first. And I sort of, like, hate that I'm saying that because it feels like such conventional wisdom and all that stuff, but like the regular season is just different. And if you're talking about Rodney Magruder as like the 10th or 11th guy, and he's at least to me an average NBA player, so few teams have that like your floor is just way up there. So I think I like them to finish first. There are, you know, five other teams that could win the conference, but the combination of top end talent and just this depth is insane. I think they have the best shot at it.
I would say 1 or 2 as well. I'm with you there. What's your bold or boldish prediction for the Clippers?
That Shamit has, this is kind of like my Bogdanovich pick. Shamit has a more positively impactful season than Lou Williams. And that's not pricing in Lou Williams like misses 50 games or whatever. I'm just really high on Shamit. And I think Williams is old enough to where sort of if you've got their lines on a graph moving to the right, like they're going to X and Shamit is going to pass him going up as Williams is trending down a little bit.
I don't know if this counts as a bold prediction. I think because of how frequently they've been crowned already, it might be. They're not going to come out of the Western Conference.
Nice. I can
see them
fitting
with the best record in the league, even if you want to go that far. I'm just not going to have them coming out of the Western Conference. Just a gut feeling at this point.
Okay, I think that's fair. I mean, I think we just talked about how the depth is like what makes them such a good regular season team, but then the playoffs are just, they're a different thing. And I don't know, I mean, if you've got George and Leonard healthy, man, I don't know. They might even be a better playoff team, but But I like your bold prediction of picking the field over the Clippers to come out of the West.
Yes. Look, hey, year one, these things don't typically work out. And so I'm going to actually play the odds. I think maybe the tables have turned because Kawhi did it in Toronto. Just came and they won a title. Everyone's so quick to think that they're going to be the best team in the West. And in the regular season, because they're so deep, I could see it. And they are better top heavy than tapping into their depth. There's just, you look at a team like the Warriors, where their core pieces, if Klay Thompson's healthy, will have been together longer. The Lakers and Anthony Davis, those two, that team, I don't want to say has more star power or that their stars fit better. It's just you have LeBron in the playoffs, and you might,
right.
There's a chance in any given series. Like, let's say Clippers and Lakers went head-to-head. Would it be completely irrational to say that there's a pretty good chance the Lakers have the two best players in that series?
Oh, no, I think that's totally reasonable. Yeah, totally reasonable.
If you found $100 on the street, would you pick it up or keep walking? Of course you'd take the money. So why do you keep picking winners and not betting on them? That's why I go to MyBookie. It's fast, it's easy, and they pay when you win. Let's face it, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. Do the smart thing. If you're going to bet football this season, bet with MyBookie. Did you know that you can even bet on games after kickoff? If by the second half it looks like your bet is going to lose, you can always just take the other side. Or if you're the kind of person that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings. And no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of the year to do it. Join now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code BLUEWIRE to activate this offer. Again, they will double your first deposit with promo code BLUEWIRE. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid.
The final team of the Pacific Division, the drastically different looking Golden State Warriors, 57-25 last year. Grant, we know all the big stuff that happened. It hurt. It rattled a lot of fans. There's been a lot of fallout in the aftermath of it. Jordan Bell is now in Minnesota, but what was the underrated move by the Warriors? That's not a move that's not getting enough love this past offseason.
I mean, it's kind of a two-headed thing. They're paying Kevon Looney and Willie Cauley-Stein less than $7 million combined next year.
Can we pause for a moment? Because I didn't even stop to think about that ever. I realized how cheap. I remember seeing the Looney deal, and I was like, that's nice. And you know, obviously, how much Willie Cauley-Stein is making. I never stopped and viewed it in those terms.
So, like, look, I will confess to being way higher on Looney than, like, this is where the vestiges of my Warriors fandom like are still, like, you can still see, like, I haven't covered them up entirely, just because I'm so in the bag for Looney. I would want him on my team under any circumstances, and to get him for just nothing is incredible. And then Cauley-Stein, you know, inconsistent, kind of flighty, has his flaws, but like, he's a starting center, and I think is in a position to succeed now, and they're just paying their centers nothing, and they're both good, so I'm pretty into that.
And look, this only proves my point that the Clippers should not have paid Zubac
right.
$7+ million a year.
Yeah,
the underrated move for me, I really liked the Alec Burks signing. I just think it gives you another guy on the cheap who can do some stuff off the dribble in Klay Thompson's absence. I like him for this team more than I like McKinney. I like him more than the Glenn Robinson III pickup. And I there's a chance to me that he could end up playing a pivotal part on this team for the first half of the season. And even when Klay Thompson comes back, to have him coming off the bench, that's, would he have been their best offensive player off the bench last year?
Oh gosh. I mean, it would have. I mean, does DeMarcus Cousins count? I mean,
all right, fair. Like, no, he has to.
He won the finals.
He has to.
No, but your point stands. I mean, like, and it's an issue going right now. I mean, he might be their best guy by default, just because. And like, I guess I'm going to jump into, you know, the miss, I guess, of the offseason or whatever. This wing depth is bad.
Have wings. They have Clay.
That's another thing. I think there's a pretty good chance that Thompson plays like maybe 15, 20 games this year. And is just not, it's a lost year. Like, I'm not counting on really anything from him, even though he's a cyborg and he wanted to come back in the game with a torn ACL and all this other stuff. I'm not counting on production from him, and certainly not like typical Klay Thompson production. So then you're talking about McKinney's going to start. He is a severely limited player. Burks is going to play. I mean, now you're talking about, you know, you mentioned Glenn Robinson. They need so much more in terms of wings on this team, especially someone that can guard, because man, are they going to struggle with wing defense?
That's why you're going to trade D'Angelo Russell midseason.
I hope so. I mean, I think that's what they would tell you if you hooked him up to pumped him with a sodium pentothal or whatever the truth serum is. But yeah, I mean, that's my offseason miss. Is they've got a giant hole at on the wing.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you there. I just don't know how else they could have filled it.
Right.
You know, the cheap wings just don't grow on trees, and they didn't have. They had even less flexibility because of the Kevin Durant sign trade. So that definitely hurt them. But I'm not sure that they could have signed an appreciable upgrade compared to who they have, even if that doesn't happen. Or let's just throw the hard cap out of the equation. Let's say this is the roster they have, but they weren't hard capped, so they would have been able to do some more stuff. There was no way for them to keep Iguodala just in that situation.
Right.
My issue with them is that they gave up 2 first-round picks.
Yeah.
This summer. That's where I think that they just missed. I don't think that they should have had to do it for Iguodala. I'm not saying Memphis should have done it without the pick, but it seems really hard for me to believe that they couldn't have gotten offloaded Iguodala for a smaller sweetener. Maybe it was like an actual player that they had on the roster, one of the youngsters that, you know, we shouldn't be too high on. I don't even know. Could there were fringe contenders with space at that point. It just seemed like they could have gotten away with not giving up 2 first round picks this summer.
So I think, this was kind of the crux of their offseason, right? As they were in a position where every move they made was sort of reactionary, built around Durant leaving and Thompson sort of being a lost, you know, just dead money almost for the first year of his new deal. So to me, and this is going to be me being an apologist. I don't know how much I believe this, but just to justify it, if you had to, I think it was a case where the league knew that the Warriors were in a position where they're going to do this sign and trade because they're committed to getting something instead of nothing for losing Durant. And the cost of that was the hard cap and having to move Iguodala. And I think the league, it's not like a collusion thing, but they were just like, we know what your situation is and we're not going to help you out of it. And I think the whole league just had them over a barrel. And I guess they just decided that, like, look, we're not a team that needs Andre Iguodala's services next year because, like we talked about, he's a 16-game player and he doesn't really fit our new timeline, whatever that is. And I think the league just stuck it to him. And that they just siphoned those picks out, which good for them. But it feels – if the whole thing, I agree with you, feels like sort of a miscalculation by the Warriors in that, like, they sort of had to have gamed this out and known this was a possibility ahead of time. And it's just strange that they got themselves into a position where they're going to have to pay such an insane cost to get rid of a useful player. It just all feels very like uncharacteristic, but yeah, it's really tough to defend that. I agree.
At the same time, can you view it as is D'Angelo Russell or what you end up getting for him worth Andre Iguodala and 2 first round picks? And
I don't know. Do you have a strong take on that?
I would say yes. I honestly think it's going to end up being yes. My whole thing is I'm going to tell you right now, I would have rather have given Jacob Evans or Jordan Poole than one of those first round picks. If that would have been the difference, I 100% would have given up one of them before one of those first round picks. And just such distant first round picks for the Iguodala one. What did they say? It was a 2021 pick or was it 2022?
It's picks that are not the types of picks you want to give up when you're not really sure how good you're going to be a few years from now.
Right. It was, I'm just not sure why it was a 2024 first round pick. Excuse me. I knew they gave up one of those super distant ones. Absolutely not. No. On that note though, what's your biggest question for this team? It's kind of the wing situation, isn't it?
It's the wing situation. I guess I'll expand it out to, is this team going to stop anybody? They have Draymond Green, who I think is, you know, one of the best defensive players ever. That's not controversial. But like if you're 1-2-3, Curry competes, he does what he can with his frame. and the load he has to carry offensively. But Russell is a major minus. McKinney, I think, I don't know if McKinney has a positive defensive reputation around the league. He looks like a guy that should be a good wing defender, but he just, he's not laterally quick. He doesn't use his length or athleticism nearly as well defensively. He's basically a really good offensive rebounder, and he can hit the occasional open three, and he just looks like a 3-and-D guy. I mean, they just have nobody that's going to shut down a good opposing scorer. And, you know, Looney is fine positionally on defense, but he's undersized as a center. Cauley-Stein is a terrible rim protector. I don't know where the stops are going to come from for this team. So I think they're going to really struggle defensively.
With you there, and you kind of answered the next question too. Mine would be, though, for them, it's kind of a two-part one. Will D'Angelo Russell finish the season? And if they do move him, what are they getting for him? Because the permutations of Jeff Teague for D'Angelo Russell, Jeff Teague and Robert Covington for D'Angelo Russell, and I think other stuff has to be included because of the Warriors hard cap, that doesn't do it for me. When you took the swing on Russell, I think it needed to be on the guys that you could get a player that's more than one of a Robert Covington, not saying two Robert Covingtons, but I wouldn't view Jeff Teague as a solid long-term piece. At two long-term moderate pieces, or maybe someone who you think is more transcendent now that you're getting from a team that wants to play the long game instead. And my natural question would be, how many games is Klay Thompson going to appear in this season, and what is he going to look like? You already mentioned it could be 20 games and he won't look like himself. If anyone's going to pull the Patrick Beverley, though, and come back early and play really well, it'd be Klay Thompson.
Yeah, I mean, I'd find me a tougher guy. Like, I just don't know. I don't know if there is one. But and like, man, do they need him? Because then, I mean, he answers your who's going to get a stop, right, as a wing defender, and who's going to be, you know, another guy that can make a shot, which they're actually kind of short on. I think that's a critical question. But I kind of feel like I know the answer to the Klay Thompson question, at least for this year.
Are they going to be better? Are they going to grade out better on offense or defense?
Yeah, I mean, we hit this. I think I don't know how good they'll be offensively. Actually, I'm kind of optimistic offensively because
top five easily, right? No,
I mean, the thing is, like, so if Curry's on the floor, what, you know, they'll be great. That's he's that good. This is not a revelation. But like, one of the huge problems for this team has been when Curry's not on the floor, they had to do weird stuff where they staggered Durant's minutes and all this other stuff. But they never had another guard like who's such a pass, shoot, dribble threat to sort of just, you know, soak up those, you know, the end of the second or the beginning of the second and fourth quarters to just kind of keep things afloat from a playmaking standpoint. There's just really never been that guy on this roster. So I'm kind of optimistic about the offense. But yeah, defense is going to be a catastrophe, I think. I don't know what really else there is to say on that one.
I'm 100% with you. Breakout candidate for this team or someone relative to what they've been, who could make a leap?
I think Cauley-Stein is in a position to succeed because, you know, the Warriors have had, let's take JaVale McGee, who, you know, was out of the league, but kind of, you know, he's in the league now basically because the Warriors turned him into a dominant lob threat who just didn't really have to do a lot else. And Cauley-Stein, I think, can do that. He's, you know, more mobile, is a better rebounder than McGee. He's just going to be in a position where, like, I think at least with the starters, Curry and Russell are going to space the floor. Draymond Green is a dynamite passer. I think he's, you know, he's already kind of an established solid to, you know, C- NBA player. I think he could really set himself up to be like a good starter and then make a ton of money on his next contract from another team.
Good pick. And he's one, a lot of people for the money that they got him, I don't trust him defensively at all. But no. For the money that they got him, the type of jump that you're talking about is not unrealistic. I'm picking Kevon Looney, which I feel like might be a bit of a cop-out, but I'm also of the mind, like, you don't have to deal with the Marcus Cousins, Jordan Bell, even Jonas Jerebko. Like, just sort of that, it was a logjam of underwhelming big men, and maybe he gets to play more than 18 minutes a game. And that just really allows him the opportunity to shine. And it also seems like the Warriors have to run more pick and roll next season, because why else would you trade for D'Angelo Russell?
Yeah.
And that's something that I think could benefit him as well. So I think this is a guy that we look back on and say, maybe he's playing the rotation role where it's closing on 25 minutes a game, and he's really grabbing those boards on the offensive glass, and he's made some contributions as a rim runner, and he's helped them be not as terrible on defense as we expected, or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, look, you're not gonna get me to play devil's advocate and say Looney's not great, and it won't, you know, continue to be greater. I love that guy.
Player most likely to be traded.
Gosh, is it the guy they traded for that, or they signed that they just 100% intend to trade because he just doesn't make a lot of sense? If you have a case for anyone ahead of Russell, I would love to hear it.
I don't, because they don't have the salary filler. They're not going to move Draymond yeah. Green now unless it's in a Giannis Antetokounmpo trade, essentially, and that's just not happening. But so here would be in sub of this category, since such an obvious answer. One, for the time that they have D'Angelo Russell, do you expect them to run a ton of more pick and roll? Two, is that going to benefit or help Stephen Curry? Because he's so dangerous running pick and roll, but there's a part of me where the way we see him, you know, the way this Warriors use him now, like, what if it ends up he's kind of orbiting Willie Cauley-Stein, D'Angelo Russell pick and rolls as this standstill shooter, basically? And then three, do you see a path to D'Angelo Russell working in Golden State for more than this, you know, 6 month period or whatever?
You know, first of all, I think yes, they're going to play more pick and roll. And I think it's kind of the thing that, like, when things go bad for the Warriors, everyone starts to scream about. It's like, just let's not overthink this. A Curry Green pick and roll yields something great every time, just because they're like, Draymond Green is a perfect short roll passer who is smart enough to know what to do when defenses switch or sag off. Like, they've just seen it so many times. They would be crazy not to run it way more than they usually do, especially because there's just way less surrounding talent. You just have to. The thing with Russell, like, just by default, what he does is kind of necessary as just a guy that kind of keeps the water level at an acceptable height when, you know, Curry's not in or whatever. Like, I think he's a high volume, low to moderate efficiency guy that on this team is really useful. So I don't feel like the Warriors are going to get in a position where they're going to be trying to trade a guy whose numbers have cratered, or they're just totally going to have to take way less than, you know, take 40 cents on the dollar or whatever, because I do think he's going to look halfway decent to pretty good just because of the situation. That said, I still don't see a scenario where he's a long-term piece. I just don't think that was their thinking. What do you think?
I'm with you. There's part of me that thinks he's going to finish the season there, but at the same time, if you acquired him with the intention of trading him, that you've in theory had time already to suss out what trade packages might be out there.
Yeah.
Strongest year-end award candidate for the Warriors.
I mean, if he's healthy and it looks like, you know, if this team is as thin as it kind of appears to be, I think the Curry MVP case is going to just kind of be there. And I think it will help that this team is rightfully viewed as at a seriously diminished level from what it was. And if he comes out and has, you know, it wouldn't have to be his unanimous MVP level type of play, but if he's even that first year or even the year after his unanimous MVP, I just could see a groundswell of support. And not to say he wouldn't deserve it, because I think he could just go crazy. But you know, the MVP is also kind of about a narrative, and you know, everybody, he's unassailable. Everyone still loves Curry despite everyone hating the Warriors. I think it's kind of on a tee for him if things go, if they break right.
Yeah, I would love to pick Draymond Green for Defensive Player of the Year, but the Warriors are not going to be anywhere near good enough for him to win that award. And I think Steph, if I had to pick right now, I would pick him to win MVP next year.
Would you really?
Yeah.
I like it.
So he's obviously my pick there too. Lineup you're dying to see from this team.
I mean, can I pick other players that are not on this roster to make a half decent lineup? We've kind of gone with conventional stuff. I'll like kind of curveball it a little bit. It's just because I want to see these guys and see what they look like. I would like to see Jacob Evans, for those of you who do not follow the Warriors G League affiliate, who's been groomed, who was drafted as a wing a couple of years ago and has been groomed as to become a point guard. I want to see him playing the one with Jordan Poole at the two, who they drafted this past this most recent draft, with Eric Paschal playing the three, which is also weird because he's not really a three, and then Green, and you can put Looney out there. I mean, like,
Do you need an adult?
What?
Like, what the fuck is this lineup?
No, this is the lineup I want to see because I just have no idea what it's going to look like. And I know what Curry is going to do. I know what Russell's going to do. I want to see what these guys that the Warriors have drafted that, during this dynasty or at the tail end of it or whatever, they've missed on like almost everybody. So I want to see if they developed Evans. I want to see if Poole is an NBA player, and I want to see if Paschal is the versatile, you know, hybrid forward. Cause I kind of know what the main guys can do. I just want to see these younger guys, how they fit, if they are long-term pieces. Cause like, look, that suddenly the long-term picture matters for the Warriors, and the few young guys they have need to work. So I want to know if these guys are it, or if these are just all, you know, lost causes in these last few drafts.
That's a pretty good justification as far as batshit crazy lineup suggestions go.
I wanted to go weird with this one since I picked so conventional on all the other teams.
I'm actually mad you got to go first because I thought I was getting a little weird with mine, but I want to see Steph, D'Angelo Russell, Alphonso McKinney, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. The death lineup needs to live on in some form.
Man, we'd have to think of what to name that. It ain't the death lineup. I don't know what you call it.
Yeah, I don't know. That could definitely be, or would definitely be, a sieve of a lineup. Still, I want to see it. Once Klay Thompson's healthy, it needs to happen. I'm hoping they don't trade D'Angelo Russell before Klay Thompson comes back. I just want to see what the Warriors are going to look like with D.A.R., Steph, and Klay Thompson. And Draymond Green, obviously, too. I just want to see it.
Yeah, no, I mean, Thompson just changes everything. I don't want to reiterate, but like he sort of just fills in the gaps on both ends, and suddenly you just look at the depth chart with him in there, and you're like, oh, okay, this team means business. But without it, it's just like just such a glaring hole in the middle.
Where are they going to finish in the West?
Oh my God, this is the hardest question because my fandom just kind of clouds everything. I'm going to say sixth, and I feel like you're going to go higher, but I'm just not comfortable with such a top heavy team. Curry's missed 43 games the last 2 years. Green missed 16 last year and basically played his way into shape, you know, in March. I just think the margin for error is so slim with those two guys just having to do everything, and Russell to a lesser extent, that I just don't feel comfortable putting them any higher.
So I'm going to answer the next two together, but my boldest prediction is part of where they're going to finish in the West. I'd like to know if this is subject to change through the night before the regular season or whenever Andy and I record our over-unders pod. The Warriors are going to finish second in the Western Conference.
Look at you.
Look, here's my...
Justify.
We ran through it when we were talking about the Lakers. All the other teams have question marks. If you want to say you know the Jazz are going to be better than them or the Nuggets, fine. Both of them? I don't know. I'm willing to entertain the fact that not both of them will be better. You can't tell me for a fact Houston's going to be better. You're not going to talk me into San Antonio definitely being better. I would say the Clippers are the only definitive team in the Western Conference that is shaping up to be better than the Warriors. And we don't even know how many games Paul George and Kawhi are going to play. If you're asking me, is it more likely for the Clippers to finish first in the West or the Warriors to finish second? Since I did pick the Clippers to finish first, I'd actually still pick the Warriors at two. Stephen Curry is going to go supernova. Draymond Green, the team is probably going to be bad on defense, but I feel like he's going to be really locked in. To have Kevon Looney in sort of that unquestioned high-volume center role now, or maybe even starting center role. Actually, he might not even start. Who knows, with Willie Cauley-Stein. I just feel like D'Angelo Russell is going to end up fitting better than we expect. And whether they end up trading him for players that fit better, or whether he ends up working out, the Warriors are going to catch people off guard. I might be baking in a little too much of Klay Thompson here. We'll find out. This might blow up in my face, but Warriors are going to finish second in the West. That is my prediction for where they're going to stand, obviously, and that takes care of my boldish, but that might be flat-out bold prediction as well.
I think it's bold, but my bold is going the other way. And is that's, and again, I think it's, I'm defining bold as like definitely not betting my life on it. by definition, if it's bold, it's maybe not likely to happen. I think them missing the playoffs would be my bold prediction. And it's strictly built around what's this team look like if Steph Curry, well, by the way, the guys that you need the most, Curry and Green, are fresh off of 5 finals runs. And just like the toll, they played an extra season plus in the last 5 years. And both are, you know, clearly, I think, past their primes just because of the aging curve. If one of those guys, Green or Curry, misses a significant chunk of the season, there's just no, yeah. I just don't see how this team competes night to night. Succeeds night to night. I just think when you're this top heavy and this dependent on guys that have just been run into the ground for a half decade running, I think your downside is pretty profound. I wouldn't bet on them missing the playoffs, but I think my bold prediction would be that's actually a legitimate possibility.
I will say no matter which end of the spectrum you fall on, the margin for error does not exist.
Right. Zero.
That has been the Pacific Division preview. Thank you, Grant Hughes, for being super generous with your time. If you guys are not following Grant on Twitter, what are you even doing with your life at this point? @GT_Hughes, spelled exactly as it sounds. Fantastic writer for Bleacher Report. Check him out there. Bonus, also just a good friend of mine after all these years of us working together. So again, follow him on Twitter. Check out his work at Bleacher Report. Until next time, I leave everybody with a shout out to Kyle Anderson and absolutely nobody else.